welcome to the Dear Edward podcast here on Posture Recaps. My name is Marissa Garza, and here to help me recap the penultimate episode of Dear Edward is Jason Reed. Jason, rock, paper, scissors. Which one are you calling?
I'm a rock guy every time. Don't tell anybody that, though. I don't want to get my strategy out there. Or am I a rock guy? Maybe I'm secretly a paper guy, but I'm just putting it out on this public podcast so that I can trick my opponents.
Ooh.
Yeah. So you got this next level thing.
Oh yeah, it's like I'm in a matrix of possibilities with that one.
Yeah, Marissa.
Yeah,
I have some bad news.
Okay? What's the news?
After the next episode, I'm going to have to cancel our podcast. Unfortunately,
so
you will be out of a job, out of one of your many jobs. So I mean, that's the bad news. Let everybody know that you're going to be down a podcast. But on the bright side. My daughter just had a birthday recently.
Yeah.
I have some cake here.
Oh my gosh.
Do you want some cake?
I would love some cake, well, but I have to like jump out this window first. So
okay, I understand. I get it. Funnily enough, people don't know this a lot, but Marissa does podcast by window. She
could escape through a window. I wouldn't jump off of this window, but the window at the school, yeah.
Yeah. It's on the ground floor. Yeah. Like I like how he said that. He's like, oh, but it's on the ground floor. So we're on the ground floor. It's okay. So he didn't jump very high. We're on the ground floor, as if you didn't know.
So many questions about that guy. Like I had so many. Like, how did you get certified as an administrator? I don't understand.
I had doctor in his title. Like I watched with the closed captioning.
Oh yeah.
And he is a doctor. So I was like, I thought, is this
of education?
Yeah. I was like, is this a psychiatrist we're seeing? Nope. Just the principal. I was like, damn it. Like thought we were gonna get some questions answered. But not quite, yeah.
Not quite. Yeah.
So this is the penultimate.
Do we feel like we got to a climax, a high? Do we think we got there?
Some things happened. We finally fulfilled the promise of the title of the show.
We got the last.
So I think that's a pretty big deal in the show. We got some things that came out. We got some confrontations that happened. So I think a lot happened here. I don't know if it fits your bill of the hype of the penultimate episode where big things happen. I still think a lot of big things will happen next week, but
yeah,
there's definitely some stuff that went down here.
Agreed. Well, before we dive into it, just a quick reminder, if you are looking for the rest of our Dear Edward coverage, you can find it at posturerecaps.com/Dear Edward to find all of the previous episodes and the future one episode, because Jason canceled our podcast, coming up through the end of the month. That's again, posturerecaps.com/Dear Edward. We did get some feedback regarding last week's episode from Nick W. in the Discord. He has been reading the book. And so he wanted to just point out that Edward getting kicked out because Shay got her period is actually directly from the book, but it's handled way differently. Shay tells him one night that he has a week left, he's got to go. She also helps Eddie set up in the basement of his house because apparently he wasn't able to enter the upstairs bedroom because he wasn't... he knew it was the nursery for the unborn babies and he didn't want to be a replacement. I really wish that part, this is Marissa talking. I really wish that part was in the show. Back to Nick. So it's handled way more delicately. And in fact, she clearly feels horrible about it instead of just throwing Edward out like she does here. Because we had said like, this is weird last episode. But I really wish like the feelings of Edward... we've talked about, we don't really know throughout this show, but like him not wanting to be a replacement is a totally healthy response to the situation.
That would have been a good thing to touch on in the show, because it's acted like as if like Edward has no thoughts about it. No thoughts right. about the fact that he is coming to this family where they really wish they had a baby. I don't even know if he knows about Lacey's issues with having children. It's never touched upon. Which of course is kind of like the thing about this show. There's a lot of things that aren't touched on, a lot of mm-hmm. things that we are wondering how characters are feeling. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been a nice touch for Edward to be like, no, I'm not going in there because I don't want to take over this room that you was reserved for your baby that never came. It would give Edward some depth, which
yes.
is very much needed, I think.
Agreed. Thanks to Nick for sharing that with us. So we got that book perspective. All right. Episode 9, Paper Covers Rock. Let's dive into Edward's storyline, and then we'll go through everybody else's, because this was one where they didn't, there wasn't a lot of crossover between everybody. So Edward starts the episode in the principal's office. Everyone keeps asking him, like, why did you push the piano? And I'm like, you are an adult in this situation. Do you not know why this kid pushed the piano? Like, I don't. It's like, I mean, I know I've been hanging out with Edward for a whole 9 episodes, but like, I don't know why we need to continuously ask this question of this child.
Do you not know why this young man is having issues? Like, are you not aware of this plane accident? Like,
it was very frustrating for me. And the principal keeps talking about how, you know, we have like active shooter protocols and we have like all these, but there's no protocol for throwing a piano down the stair. And I'm like, get over it, dude. Like, this is what, sorry. Really strong feelings about the situation. He didn't really show Edward any compassion throughout this whole conversation. And basically, finally, we get a, you're going to have to talk to the school psychiatrist, but it's in the context of, you're going to have to leave the school.
it's like psychiatrist, like, yeah. we're like, it's there it is, there's the word. It really does seem like this is the first time anyone's mentioned the word psychiatrist in this context, to Eddie. And it's like, yeah, because we're about to find out where you're going to go, because we're going to kick you out for that. As if he's just some troubled kid, like, behaviorally, as if there's no deeper rooted issue, as if he's just some jerk kid. And as if I'm just baffled by, like, the refusal to treat Edward as if he hasn't been through a extremely traumatic experience.
Well, and these adults that have been surrounding his life have been getting support since day one, and he's just like floating around,
just left to fend for himself. Like, as we talked about, like, this show is supposedly centered around a form of therapy in a grief group,
right?
But we've just totally been ignoring the survivor of this plane crash as if he doesn't need any help. Like, you survived, you should be thankful, like, be over there, kid. Like, it's so bizarre. We keep harping on it, but it needs to be talked about. It needs to be harped on, because it's such a glaring omission in the show as a whole.
And I feel for Edward, like, the whole time. I'm like, he's not being supported in the way that he could be. And, you know, you could have you too can prevent pianos from falling downstairs if you listen to children and help them with their needs, or like talk to them about their experiences. Not saying that all kids throw pianos, but you know what I'm saying. The principal then says, this was also just like the cherry on top for me with this whole situation. He's like, hey, someone brought in a cake for a birthday. Would you like a slice of cake? Like,
I was like, why? As you're a writer writing the show, you chose to put this in here. Like, is this supposed to show how unserious they're taking Edward? Like,
well, or the guy, like, cake the is the only thing that can make him happy, or like that can comfort him.
I'm at a loss, like, because the guy just like flips the switch. He's like, hey, by the way, Debbie brought some cake in. You want some cake? Like, it was such a bizarre just turn. I was like, okay, that's weird.
Yeah,
but all right.
I did not enjoy that whole scene, and neither does Edward, because he sees an opportunity and takes it. He sees the window is open. There's no screen in the window, and so he can just, you know, escape out of the window because it's on the first floor, and he runs away from school.
Yeah, and I haven't felt for Edward a lot, to be honest with you, in the whole of the show, but this episode particularly was just like, it really got me closer to Edward and his mindset and his mind frame. And it really made me feel for Edward, which, you know, we're at episode 9 of a 10 episode series. So I wish it could have happened a little earlier, but I really like felt connected to Edward in this episode. I really, I think his name's Colin O'Brien, the actor that plays Edward, probably some of his best stuff here. And it wasn't even oral or auditory. It was his facial expression. Yeah. It was his body acting, I felt, really kind of conveyed what we were supposed to be feeling for Edward here.
Yeah, agreed. And I think it might have been, you know, the first time the character let himself feel like that stuff too. So Agreed. Back at home, Lacey is looking for Linda at their late for grief group, but Linda doesn't feel good. And I, you know, appreciated the conversation here, even though later on we find out Linda really wasn't feeling good. But, you know, Lacey's whole perspective is like, well, sometimes if you're feeling like you're not feeling great, but your body is okay, it's just better to get out of bed. And Linda's like, that's great. We're not all you, but I'm going to stay in bed. Cool. Thanks. And she's like, okay, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, get out of my face, Lacey. Like,
I know. I was like, okay. At that point, she gets a call from the school. Edward is walking home. He sees the putting green in the driveway. Shay has returned the putting green. He puts it in the garage, walks in the house. He finds out no one's home except for Linda. This part was very relatable to what, you know, latchkey kid Marissa would do when she was younger. She would come home and eat ice cream and put on music and walk around the house. So that's Edward's take on his day, which I don't blame him. He's like, first of all, ice cream is better than cake. And second of all, I would want to have some after that conversation.
He was in a F all this, like, just territory attitude. Like, this day was shit. Let me just go eat some ice cream and listen to music and block out the whole world. I almost thought that he had, like, just kind of broken. And I at first, like, is this Shay's house? Like, is he doing something weird? And I was like, oh no, this is still Lacey's house. Once we heard Linda, you know, moaning. But yeah, I definitely am pro Eddie on the, you know, chill out, eat ice cream, and just forget about all of your worries.
Yeah. So Linda's upstairs. She's moaning now. So she's not sleeping. She's not disassociating. She is in some pain. She's like having the baby.
I was like, what is happening?
I know. I was like, are we for serious? And then Linda's like, call 911. And, you know, he can't do it because he's having flashbacks to his experience. And he remembers High Rescue Guy and his experience in the hospital. And I just cannot believe, I mean, I understand as a kid, you know, you want to be where the adults are, especially in this kind of, you know, dangerous situation. But he hands the phone to Linda so Linda can talk to 911.
Linda grabs the phone because, like, Eddie's like frozen.
Yeah.
And she's like, fine, I'll do it myself. Like, just give me the phone. Like, I love that part. And I thought almost it was like, it was kind of like, I almost thought it was going to be a commentary on, like, okay, snap out of your own troubles. Like, this is something real is happening here. And you have to, like, snap yourself out of this and be responsible in this moment. Like, forget you. Like, Linda is in trouble. But it wasn't really that. I thought it was going to be something in that way, but it wasn't. And yeah, it was an interesting moment for him to experience just kind of what this high pressure situation he's put in right now, where he has to, like, really be, like, in this high pressure moment, and how he has those flashbacks and how he has those remembrances and how that affects him. I thought it was very interesting.
I think it's to me, what I picked up on, because he later, like, gets in the ambulance and, like, goes all the way, you know, to the hospital with Linda. That's a very parentifying experience, because it's like he is now in responsibility for Linda and this kid, like, from his perspective. Like, I called 911. I'm here. Like, I could just see him, if he's in this heightened state, just taking on, or feeling responsible, maybe not taking on the responsibility. But I think there were a couple moments throughout this episode where he was kind of put in that role of caring for the adults.
Yeah, but he didn't even, I don't even know why he was in the ambulance to begin with.
Agreed. I don't know why he went either, but he found himself there.
He didn't do anything else after that. He didn't just take any
in the hall. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know why, if you're not going to make these moments count, why we're going through them. It just kind of felt like he was there because he was in the vicinity, and they were just like, all right, come on, get in the ambulance, can't leave you here alone, home alone, right? Maybe I don't know what the issue, what the reasoning was, but I was surprised to see him in the ambulance with Linda. I was like, oh, okay.
I think that stepped up in the moment either. He just, like, was so into his flashbacks that he just went with the situation that was there. Yeah. Or there was like, oh, we can't leave you at home.
Yeah, and then later he was so kind of just ambivalent to everything. He's just like, Linda's gonna die, baby might die,
yeah,
whatever. I thought he was going to step up in the moment and be like, you know, really kind of take charge of the situation and snap himself out of his stuff, but it didn't materialize that way.
No, it actually, like, I think brought him closer to his experience than we've seen him this entire season.
Yeah, for sure.
Lacey runs to school and the principal's like, "We have a slight problem." "He disappeared." "What do you mean he disappeared?" And then the sentence just like blew my mind. She's like, "In the last hour, you're telling me Edward pushed a piano down the stairs, jumped out of the window, and disappeared."
Like, in thin air? It's just thin air. He's like, "What are you going to do about this?" Or whatever she said. I was like, yeah, that's the least your problem at the moment, Lacey.
Yeah, she gets a phone call from the hospital asking if Lacey is Linda's next of kin, which I thought was interesting.
I was like, no. Like, I thought that opened up like a, like, is Lacey going to take Linda's kid? Did Linda just die? I was like, are they going down that route? I mean, which I think, you know, is semi-predictable. Like, you know, as I'm thinking of it, like, yeah, Lacey wants a kid. This is a way to get a kid, but are we going to really kill Linda? Like, I just, like, that was my thought. Are we going to kill Linda right now? Is that what we're doing? I understand she hasn't done much, but damn, we're just going to kill her for Lacey? Like, she's just going to be Lacey's kind of, like, you know, baby delivery vessel? I was like, that's kind of harsh. That's kind of crazy for this show.
I mean, she wasn't even in the last episode.
Yeah. We're just going to kill her off and give Lacey her baby. Like, I was like, wow. In my mind, I was like, that would kind of explain why Linda just randomly started living there. Like, so, you know,
they had some sort of agreement that day, like, that she first came over, that was like, if anything happens, you can take my child.
Now, if you die, I get your kid. You sign this contract here, here, and here.
Don't have to pay rent, but. Yeah.
And Lacey just starts, like, slowly poisoning her food or something, making sure something bad happens. Like,
different show.
I was concerned for Linda in that moment for sure, because, you know, usually in a TV show, when you're asked if you're next to kin, that's definitely a sign of bad times.
Yeah, I've watched enough ER in my life. That was always a big thing on ER. Like, are you next to kin? Oh no, that's what's happening. Lacey makes her way to the hospital and finds Edward there just sitting in the hallway, and there's no word on Linda yet, but she starts talking to Edward about, like, what happened at school. And again, she's pressing Edward for this, like, why did you do it? Why did you push the piano? And he's like, I wanted to hear what it sounded like, a good enough answer. And, you know, I feel like in high stress situations, like, we all process things differently. Some people do like loud noises. Some people do want to, like, run. Some people, like, want to smash things, as we've seen in the show. Like, there are ways of processing this energy, and maybe that was his way, but nobody seems to be picking up on why that's what he was looking for.
I mean, listen, as a parent, I can definitely relate with Lacey in the moment, because whenever anything happens with your child, you want to know why, partly because you want to fix it. Like, you want to figure out, like, what caused this, like, behavior, and how can we course correct going forward? So when your kid says either something like, you know, because I wanted to, or because I wanted to hear what it sounded like, which is kind of similar to that. It's to a parent's ear, it's just like, that doesn't make sense. There's something deeper, and you want to get to the root of that. So you can, you know, try and fix it if it's fixable. But I do hear what you're saying. It's like, but, you know, in those moments, it's just like, yeah, no, that's not good enough. I need some other reason. Like, I need something to go.
Like, understand wanting to know what it is, and I'm not a parent, so my view on this is much different. It's probably really hard to do at the moment, but, like, if I, you could separate the conversation. Like, I'm not going to get my answer right now. Like, I'm not going to find out. I'm not going to find out right now. I might be able to find out later. So, do you want some ice cream? As we see a little bit with how John's approach to it a little bit later is just like, I'm not gonna pressure you for it. I understand. And I think it's hard. I totally get your perspective, and
yeah, especially in the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very hard to kind of pull yourself back.
Exactly. Because you're, as a parent, feeling things too and triggered, right. And like how that impacts your parenting life. I totally get that.
I'm just like, now I gotta pay for a piano. Yeah, cool. Exactly. I want to figure out why I have to do that now. Like, what brought this upon you? And it's not every day that you have a kid like Edward that obviously has gone through some traumatic stuff. Right. This is just, you know, what I'm talking about is like just common like kid idiotry. And you're like, why would you do that?
Did she draw on the wall?
Right.
Why didn't you?
Right. Like this isn't a normal situation that Edward's going through. So I just relating it to my life and to how I feel in those types of moments. It's like, you really want answers, and it is hard to pull yourself back in the moment and be like, well, let me give them some time. You know, it could be a situation where you're upset with the kid, you are trying to figure stuff out. So it is hard in the moment to kind of pull yourself back in that way.
Oh yeah. I mean, even not even, I don't, like I said, I don't have kids, but just like people in my life, I get triggered by situations, and then it's like, okay, but it's not like, it's hard to pull out.
Yeah. I mean,
part from the larger perspective.
Part of being a parent, I know my part of my experience as part of being a parent is looking back at things later and going like, I could handle that differently. But
it's human. Yeah.
Yeah. In the moment, it's tough. And I think Lacey has definitely felt that a lot in this series.
Well, and I give Lacey some credit here because her introduction to parenting is also.
Yeah. It's also abrupt. It's abrupt and quick. And, you know, you know, as much as we give Lacey grief, we also have to give her a little bit of grace, because she has been kind of thrust into this parenting role.
She lost her sister, she lost her nephew, she lost her brother-in-law, she lost some children before this, she's going through a separation, she's got Edward, there's a lot of things on her plate. So I can understand, you know, where she's, I think the show though just leaned in on this, like all of the adults asking, I it's probably to make like how John reacted to it a little bit easier, but it like happened, like every adult, everybody kept asking him, and I was getting annoyed for Edward. I was like, just leave it.
I get it. I don't even think Edward really even knows, like
he doesn't know.
I think it was just a response in the moment to everything that's happened, and sometimes your emotions and your brain just takes over, like, you know, I'm gonna push this piano downstairs right now, because you know, it's tough for Edward to explain, I think is a big part of this. So,
and
it's a complex situation.
Well, and another parenting thing that comes up in this conversation between Lacey and Edward is the whole everything's gonna be fine, no one's gonna die conversation. Lacey is like very determined and says like, everyone's gonna be fine, no one's gonna die, and Edward's like, no, we're all gonna die, like nothing matters. And you know, I think the answer is somewhere in between there. Growing up, I was always told, like, this is gonna sound really, but it's not like, hey, you skinned your knee, you're one step closer to death. But death is always like a part of the conversations in my family of like, just realize we all could die at some point. I didn't grow up in a house that told me that everything was going to be okay all of the time and nobody was going to die. And so I think, like I said, the answer is between where Lacey is and where Edward is, because when I live too much in the everybody's going to die bucket, life gets real dark real fast. And then when I live in the everything's gonna be okay, nobody's gonna die,
then people
bucket,
die.
And then like, people what? Die, and then I like crash super fast. Right. So what I mean, did you think about this conversation?
So I mean, it is a delicate balance, right? Because Lacey's saying it's okay, no one's gonna die, but she has no way of knowing that.
Right.
So
or I mean, promising that or controlling that.
So that was not great. And then Edward's like, everyone's gonna die. Like as a parent, it's just like, oh my god, like that's a serious, like you know, we're not all, you know, born with psychology degrees,
right,
to know how to handle situations like that when a kid says things like that. So that has to be tough for anyone when that's a child's response to something. and that's why it's like, this isn't the first time that Edward's been like really kind of, you know, pessimistic like this. And you know, it just comes back to like, why isn't this kid getting any help? It's like, oh,
yes, exactly. Yeah,
because that phrase alone is like, oh,
red flag.
Let me go get you some help. Like, and I understand that, you know, in a sense, that mental help and mental health is somewhat of a new, thing that have happened. Like when I was a kid, that wasn't the first, you know, reaction. It was just kind of like, okay, everything be fine. Like now I feel like it's in ways easier to get mental help and in ways that's more of a reaction to things.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was always that way. I think it's relatively new. But it's helpful as we've learned.
Well, and I think it's a very delicate situation when it comes to situations like this, because for a long time, kids seeking mental health was tied to the safety and care of the children and whether the children would stay in that environment or not. Yeah. And a lot of parents were hesitant to find help for children because they were afraid that their parental rights might be taken away or altered in some way. This was like the 80s, 90s time. We've come some way from then, but I think it is still, you know, a consideration in terms of, especially in a situation like this, where, I mean, I'm not 100% sure what the legal status is of her guardianship or anything like that of Edward. And like, he's got so much, there's just so much going on that it could be a little bit vulnerable to do that, but he does need help. So how, like, just go and do it at this point.
Yeah. I mean, we talk, you know, there's talk in this episode about the airline funding.
Yeah.
For everyone
but him.
That is at the center of this show. But apparently that hasn't happened for Edward. Or, you know, in the Discord, Nick, who, as you described, is reading the book, you know, talks about how Eddie's therapist in the book is like the seventh most important character in the book. But like, it's a character in the book. Like, they exist. They're there. Yeah. But why hasn't that transferred over to the show is my big question. And we have looked and we haven't seen anyone connected with the show really answer that question or talk about it anywhere in interviews. So it's my number one question I want answered is like, why hasn't that been included in the show? Mm-hmm. I think it needs to be touched upon it, and I won't stop like harping on it until we get it. Edward's going through a lot.
If we don't get it, I don't know what the show is trying to do or tell us, to be quite honest.
Yeah, true.
So we got one episode. Come through.
Come on, Jason Kadams.
Well, after this existential conversation that they're having in the hospital, waiting to find out if their friend Linda is alive or have had a baby.
Yeah.
Lacey's like, I'm going to call Uncle John to pick you up. And here again, I mean, I think we see Edward like just living in a black and white type of world in terms of like everything is either all in or all out, because he's like, well, you're not married anymore. You're divorced. Like that's the thing. And she's like, we're separated. He's still your uncle.
Yeah.
I'm going to call you. But he's at that like stage of everything is either on one side of the fence or the other. There's no room for anything in between. So John comes and picks him up, and don't worry, he's got the party mix. Okay. We've got cheese balls and pretzels and everything. He's like the cool dad. He's got it all.
Uncle John is like he's like that cool uncle. Like that just comes by and like gives you stuff you're probably not supposed to have. Like you want some junk food right now? Like I'm down. Like let me get you some junk food. Here's some money. Don't tell your mom I gave you this money. Like he's the cool uncle that comes by and you're always happy to see him. We all knew what he was talking about. He's like that party mixture, that big barrel. I was like, oh yeah, I know that barrel.
Yeah, yeah. And the first thing Edward notices about their conversation, he says, like, you're not going to ask me why I did it, like. And John's like, well, do you want to talk about it? They're like, no. Okay. Well, then they pull up and I saw the words boiler room on the door. And I was like, oh my God.
Letters. We're going to get the letters.
Getting the letters. But not before Edward waits outside and doesn't want to go in and gives John an opportunity to talk about how when his parents split when he was 15 and how he smashed light bulbs and he really just wanted to hear how it sounded. He liked how it sounded. And so he can relate to Edward on the I just wanted to hear how it sounded front. He ended up going to therapy as well. And this gets Edward to open up about how he feels a lot of guilt because of the rock, paper, scissors that happened before Eddie took the window seat. Jordan was supposed to be in the window seat, but Eddie won. And John just has, as I put in my notes, this face of, that's deep, yo.
He's like, all right, cool. Let's go inside. Like, we're not going to talk about that anymore. Let's walk
where,
inside.
Where do you stand on rock, paper, scissors? Is it, as John says later on in the episode, a legally binding contract? Is it a...
Yeah, you can go to jail if you don't stick by the terms of the results of rock, paper, scissors. That's, everyone knows that.
And are you a rock, paper, scissors shoot person, or are you just rock, paper, scissors go?
Do you we're not shooting. We're just going. There's no shoots here. Yeah.
Do you play with the match? Sometimes some people will play with a match. Because the match.
Match? What does that mean?
Like rock, paper, scissors match. Matches can light paper on fire and then can get smashed.
I play with dynamite. I play with dynamite that can blow up the rock.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the only thing I've done. I haven't done matches. I've done dynamite before.
I just feel like paper is superior. And if you play with the match, you have a chance. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Okay, so I did not know. Did you know that John was living at work?
No, but I felt like maybe he's an overnight maintenance man. So maybe he does sleep down there or something. I mean, I guess it's not surprising considering he, I mean, maybe that's why he so easily left Lacey's. He's just like, you know what? I got a nice couch in the boiler room. I'll just stay there.
He's out. Yeah. And he gets a call that there's an emergency somewhere else on campus. And so he's got to go. And he gives like this whole speech about rock, paper, scissors and how it's a legally binding contract. Mm-hmm. And like, that was your seat. You're supposed to be here. So I'm going to go.
it didn't really seem to move Eddie one way or the other. He's just like, okay, cool.
Then he leaves Eddie alone, and I'm like, with the letters? With the letters?
We're going to find the letters. We're going to find the letters.
We're getting there. Lacey, back at the hospital. Linda is alive. She has had the baby.
They try it. They try it real hard because they gave us the, like, no audio of the doctor or nurse, whoever, talking to Lacey, and Lacey's face look. Oh, my God. Like, I thought they were telling me that Linda was dead. I was okay.
But then also, like, later when they go into the NICU and, like, Lacey can't go because she's not the mom or whatever, like, Linda's there and, like, Linda's face is, and I'm like, is the baby? Is there something wrong with the baby?
Right. It's like, it's so much was crazy here. Like, Lacey's face, like, okay, oh, they just told her that Linda's dead. Mm. Oh, my God. She's going to have to go, like, you know, see the baby. She could take care of the baby. And then she walks in and Linda's just sitting there. I'm like, oh. Okay, Linda's alive. All right, cool. Like, that shocked me. I think they tried to really get us several times.
Well, and then the question is, like, did she have the baby? And
yeah,
then
is the
guy
baby
just,
okay?
The baby just comes, hey, mama, want to see the baby? And I was like,
yeah, I thought it was going to have to be like, Linda was going to wake up. She'd be like, how's the baby? And I'm like, Linda, we have some bad news.
Yeah, or
like, oh, that was going to be the case. Like, we've seen so many television shows, just like we knew what was coming. Then the show was just like, skirt, no, you thought you knew, but nope, everything's fine. Everyone's alive.
Grey's Anatomy doesn't even play this way. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like,
this was a lot. I still don't know. We don't know what's up with the baby. So hopefully we'll find out.
I mean, I think it was just the baby's premature. So maybe
we're worried.
It has to be taken care of differently, I guess. They never give us any reasoning for Linda's condition. Like, did her water just break early? Is that the thing? Is there some other issue happening? They never, like this show, they just never go into any real details on anything. It's like, nope, it just happened. You don't have to, don't worry about the
extra
details. It's a lot of
yada yada-ing in that situation.
Big yada yada energy for sure.
Well, the last we see of Edward in this episode, he hears the boiler and I'm like, oh, here we go. And he finds this like Rubbermaid container that says letters for Edward.
Literally a box just labeled letters for Eddie. Oh, okay. Cool. Okay. It's a labeled box. That's great.
What did you think of this letters reveal? Like, there was a lot happening here.
It was tough. Like, it was a tough hang for sure. I texted you right after I watched the episode and I was like, this show's a bucket of fun, huh? It's just, you know, it was a lot. I mean, there were some good letters in there and then some really crappy ones as I kind of expected there to be. I think if we're talking real world, there would have been even worse letters. Yeah. Like, we did have the one from, like, the conspiracy theorist. I was like, we know that you're not Edward, blah, blah, blah. But I think there'd be even worse letters in there if this was real life, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, we got everything from, like, hi, I'm from China. I want to be your friend. To, I don't know if I can continue living.
There's someone there with the suicide, with a with a suicide note there. Just like, wow, that's heavy. That's so heavy. And I do think that's probably true to life in a situation like this. People see things in these people that have these types of experience. And I mean, it's even easier now with the advents of social media, of Twitter, of so many ways you can get in contact with people. As we talked about in a previous episode, like for some reason in this world, people chose snail mail to contact this person. But yeah, it's people put things on other people that have experienced things. They can either think they relate, or they want to relate, or they just kind of, I don't know, fetishize trauma and grief.
Well,
and they see this as an outlet.
And I think we see it go in the other way too, just in our normal lives through like parasocial relationships. Like people feel like people that they know on the internet are their actual friends, and like,
and in a way they own them. And we've seen it in reality TV, contestants, where people think just because you were on a reality show, they can talk to you any type of way, especially since it's from behind a keyboard, or in this case, behind a pen, like, you know, and it's, I mean, it's really terrible. Like, you know, thinking about it in the real world context too. And it's terrible here looking at on this fictionalized TV show.
This is why I kind of wish the letters were introduced a little bit more, because I do find this conversation very interesting, and one that is very, like tangible to everyone's lives, because part of like experiencing a TV show is also that experience of like caring for people that don't exist and that we don't know. And it would have just been, I mean, I'm glad that it's here. I don't know if it'll be addressed in the last episode, but I would have appreciated a little bit more time with this concept of why do people feel so attached to Edward and feel like they can share all this information.
Yeah, we see like in the moment toll that it takes on Edward, and I think it would be interesting to talk about the effects it has on the people getting the type of feedback they're getting from these people. Just, I mean, you're talking to real people, and that's the issue that we talked about with like the reality show people. Like, you're talking to real people; these aren't characters on a TV show. You're talking to real people, and how that, I would like to, for them to delve into how that affects those people. I think hopefully we'll get a little bit of that. But like you said, I wish we had gotten it a little earlier in the series.
Yeah. And I also feel really bad because, I mean, there's nothing I can do about it, but this kid's alone while he's finding this out. And that's a lot to carry.
And it's like, I know that we needed this for the show, but it feels like if I was talking real world, like, that John and Lacey would have sat down and as they're getting these letters, open the letters, be like, okay, this one is from a ridiculous person. Let's throw that away. Let's throw it in the furnace in this boiler room.
This one to the police.
Right, exactly. And be like, you know, let's call about this person that is threatening their own lives, like, in this letter.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I think, would have been the real world thing to do, not just boxed up and throw it in a corner and label it letters to Eddie. I like they just took the time to label it as well.
I wonder. So now this is my
conspiracy theory time.
Well, but I wonder if it's a metaphor for trauma. Like, we collect all of the stuff, we put it in a box, we don't think about it. So what is the power that can happen when we label it and then deal with it? Again,
that's deep, yo.
Label it and deal with it. Maybe a couple episodes in, we would have had more time. I would stand by that. That might be the message we're supposed to be receiving here, but I don't know, in the ninth episode.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, anything else on the Edward, Lacey, Linda, John of it all before we move on to other characters in this episode?
No, I mean, my prediction last week that we were all going to come together for Linda's baby was wrong in the last episode, but that's fine. I did like the directing in the letters portion where we saw the different people somewhere behind as they like filled the room with Eddie as he's reading the letters. I did really like that choice to do it that way. It felt like a really like Eddie is experiencing all this in the room with him, so I really like that choice how to direct that scene.
And I also liked how it also created a little bit of an like aura of confusion, because people were coming from different places. So not only did we hear like their voices, but we also kind of experienced it from what Eddie was experiencing at the same time. I agree. Mm-hmm. It was a good
scene. So many voices just in his head at the same time. Yeah. Was really good.
Yep. Well, all right, we'll come back and talk about everybody else. All right. With the big Edward storyline out of the way, there were a couple other developments with a couple other of our characters. The first one I thought we could talk about is Sam and Sienna. So as we know, in the last episode, Sienna had found pictures of Vernon on Sam's phone, and she's not wasting any time.
Yeah, she ain't happy.
She confronts him about the photo. Sam is in pure denial mode. It doesn't mean anything. I'm not gay. It doesn't say it, like, just deny, deny, deny. Sienna has no time for this. Got to take care of their daughter. But then comes back and has like an actual conversation about like, who is Vernon, and asks about Ben. Like, I deserve to know what this relationship was about. And Sam opens up and says, Ben was the first person I ever loved. Nothing ever happened. And Sienna is not happy about it.
Yeah. I mean, the Sam and Ben relationship and dynamic still really confuses me. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, how long, like, so we're to believe that Sam didn't have any contact with Ben right before the plane crash. It's all this is hitting him because Ben is all of a sudden dead, but it didn't feel like they've had a lot of communication.
They had the storage unit.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed
like they trusted each other enough for that to happen.
Well, it seemed that Sienna knew Ben because she was asking about Ben the earlier episode. So it's just like, I really still want to know what the dynamic between Ben and Sam was like right before the plane crash. Were they in communication? Did they have a secret relationship? I'm still not clear on that. It doesn't seem so, but it's not clear to me.
Agreed. Yeah, I think a lot of what Sam's thinking about when he thinks of Ben is in the past. We do see that one flashback of them at a baseball field, and they're like holding pinkies on the fence, but they're very, you know, they're younger, much younger. We do hear, mm-hmm. you know, nothing ever happened. They just kissed a couple of times. When was that? Was that in their childhood? Was that now? Like, when did that happen? And Sienna's, you know, point here is like, you knew this about yourself before we met, and you didn't give me a full choice in terms of what I, you know, what my life was going to be. And she's very upset.
Yeah. I was like, that's an interesting way to come to this. Like, would be her choice to what, you know, go out with someone that was also interested in men? Like, is that?
Well, and I feel like sometimes people don't, like, they, like, in this case, Sam knew in quotation marks, but he didn't, like, allow himself to explore that and denied that part of him for so long. And that is part of who Ben is, mm-hmm. you know? So, like, would it have been much different?
That's what I'm wondering. Like, if Sienna had known this about Sam, you know, to begin with, would she still have married him? I'm just like, is that what Sienna's questioning? Like, did she want to be married to a bisexual man? I was like, that's kind of an interesting.
It's so weird. Yeah, because she was like, Sam tells her, I choose you. I chose you. And she's like, I didn't have a choice.
I was like, okay, that's go off, okay. Queen, but all right. I mean, I understand that she is, you know, enraged. I mean, mm-hmm. who wouldn't be? You mm-hmm. just found your husband sending, you know, nudes, semi nudes mm-hmm. to someone. It doesn't even matter who it is. If it would have been another woman, I think she probably would have had the same type of reaction. But now she's having to contend with the fact that there's a new fact about the person she loved that she didn't know.
Yeah. And she basically like ends the conversation with him saying, I don't want an open marriage. You need to decide what you want your life to be. Bye. Yeah. And she like leaves. Bye. See ya. Yeah.
I mean, I don't blame her. I mean, in the moment I was like, oh, why are you saying this? Cause he might be bi. But I was like, oh no, this would be the same thing if this was a woman that Sam was talking to. Like, she's like, I don't want to be an open marriage. It's like, it's not really an open marriage. It's kind of like he was cheating on you behind your back.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Yeah. So I was her word choice was interesting to me throughout this whole thing, but I do understand the emotions and the reasoning behind what she's saying. Like, I had to remind myself, yeah, like literally you're just finding out that you're getting semi cheated on
you. Well, and her like ultimatum or like decision she's forcing him to make is one he's been avoiding his whole life. He's just been going with the flow of what it was expected of him and what he thought would make other people happy. So now he's got to figure out what he wants.
Yeah, I'm happy we're finally getting some resolution to Sam's story, because it was Sam's story was late in the game.
Sure was.
And it was just like, what even? We started this going like, what even is this? Because we feel like there's some missing part of the story that we didn't get. So it's starting to become a little clearer, but it's still even so a little murky, because I am not feeling the connection between Sam and Ben. I'm not sure about what it was right before. Like, apparently Sam is close enough to Ben that he knows Ben's grandmother to volunteer to take care of the shipping, the storage unit. It's like, obviously there's still some level of closeness. It's so confusing, and we're not going to get any the answers that I want in one episode. So I think we're going to leave the season for me still scratching my head a lot at the Sam storyline.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see where it goes, where it lands. We did see a little bit from Dee Dee this episode as well. She starts off visiting. I had no idea where she was. I had no clue where she was, but she was in Milo's office, apparently. Milo was super grumpy about the whole business.
Who knew Milo even had an office? I was like, what? I was so confused.
She comes in and basically says, you know, like, our next meeting is our last one because the airline's pulling the funding for the group. And Milo is like not happy about it. He thinks that sucks as well. But Dee Dee's like, you know, let's throw a party.
Like, yeah, a lot of the Dee Dee storyline here was kind of like, huh? Like,
yeah, I think it was just like, and we're gonna have to put a bow on the season, and Dee Dee's gonna organize it.
That's 100% what it felt like. It just kind of came out of the blue. Everything of Dee Dee's this episode came out of nowhere, and it was like, hey, this is the last time the group's getting together because I'm never gonna see these people again. I was like, you're not?
Do you not have phones? Like,
right. So can you not just be like
calling Steven every 5 seconds?
Yeah, it's like, all right, the airline's not paying for this anymore, but we can still get together in my house or anyone's house or any other place. Like, why does it exactly have to end? It doesn't feel like Milo did that much in the first place to really kind of like tie everything together. It seemed like y'all just kind of got together and shared your stuff as little as we've seen of the group as a whole. Which makes this part of the episode, which is mainly Dee Dee's part of the episode, ring really false to me.
Yeah, because like, we don't know how much this means to them.
Right, because we haven't seen a lot of it. We haven't seen a lot of Greek group. We haven't seen a lot of bonding between all of the characters. We got that one yard sale, you know, bonding activity, and that was about it. So it's just like, besides different connections, like a Dee Dee to Steve, or, you know, Steve and Amanda.
I was going to say, some people have bonded.
Right. But it hasn't felt like they've become a community or a family of the whole group together. People have made different connections, but it hasn't felt cohesive as a whole. So every time Dee Dee in this episode says, they're like my family, or I'm so sad the group is disbanding, I'm just like, really? Like, that rings untrue.
Well, and especially for her character, because she hasn't really shared that much in the group, nor like out of everyone that's there, Lacey's had the most interaction with people who've come to her house, who've stayed at her house.
And we've seemingly just totally dropped the Dee Dee Linda connection. It seems like Lacey took over for Dee Dee with the Linda stuff. Yeah. So it's like, she doesn't even really have that. So it's like, I mean, she has Steve, but like, I don't feel it when she says it. I don't feel it like she's going to really, she says, I'm going to really, really miss these people. These people are like my family. Like, I don't buy it.
Well, we'll see. Maybe there will be a very vulnerable share at the next last grief group meeting.
Absolutely.
She goes on to finally tell Zoe about her father.
What the hell? Talk about meeting
therapy.
What the hell was this? Really? I was like, This is how you're doing it?
I mean, I don't want to criticize parental skill, but like, this was, what is this? How was she parenting in this situation? Hi, I'm just going to like storm my way into my daughter's room, have her friends listen to me tell her about her dad and how he had a whole other life with a whole other person in California and how he failed you and all of the stuff. She doesn't want any ramen though, so it's okay. I just was like, I can't believe this is happening.
She just walks in, word vomits all over Zoe, all of the deep, dark secrets she's been holding in. And there was no lead up to this at all in the show. So it's like, this hit me really terribly. I was like, this is really awful. This is really bad. Like, I could see if she went there to Milo's and talked to Milo about this.
Yes.
And Milo.
How should I tell Zoe?
Right. Milo in some way encouraged her to tell Zoe, but she just kind of goes off and does it her way. But we didn't get that. We didn't get any lead up to this. And it felt so rushed. It felt so like undeserved. I was just like, this is how you're doing it, TV show? I wasn't even talking to Dee Dee. I was like, this is how you're doing it? They're like, this is how you're doing a TV show? This is terrible.
And it's like a high word vomit, but then also like the grief group replaced your father for me.
How? In what way?
I'm here to, I know that I could change. I didn't think she really had much to change in the first place. So I was very confused. Like, where did all of this come from? And then she's just like, okay, bye.
Yeah. Tells Lucy to shut up. I'm like, so, and she's like, you know, your father hurt. Like, she gives no compassion to her father.
Correct.
Really. She kind of, you know, craps on him to Zoe in a way. Tells Zoe that, you know, your father loved men. So there's that. And just leaves her with it. Like, drops on her and leaves her with it.
This is where I will say, this might be the only time in the series I'm on Zoe's team, because this conversation was all about Dee Dee. Like, there was no, how do you feel about this information that I am just telling you?
Let me tell you, Zoe makes it real hard to be team Zoe.
100%. Like, yeah.
As Dee Dee walks into Zoe's place, I understand it's sudden, but Zoe is just the crappiest human you can be. I'm just like, okay, you are sitting in this, I'm sure, kind of luxury-ish New York apartment dorm that I'm sure that your mother is paying for right now, or your father paid for, and you're just sitting here just being awful to your mom. And I may or may not be sensitive to this at the moment, as I'm dealing with a teen myself, so that might be affecting my feelings on this. But I was like, you little jerk. But then Dee Dee does come in and just unloads all this stuff on her, just is like, all right, cool, I got that out, bye, deuces,
I have a party to plan, bye.
It's enraged me so much. I was like, this is an awful way to do this.
Yeah, not a fan. And I do hope Zoe goes to therapy. Like, basically,
well, we hope everyone goes to therapy. Everyone in this show needs therapy. Let's get that out there.
This podcast brought to you by therapy.
Yeah, get some.
Speaking of people who need to go to therapy, Steve and Amanda. Okay, so Steven's like, hey, let me bring over this stuff. Let's make grandma's soup dumplings, because that's what friends do. Friends who aren't interested into each other and all of the stuff. And Amanda's 100% like, why are you here? What are we doing? And they end up kissing and making out.
Team Daphne. Hashtag Team Daphne. Hashtag justice for Daphne. I really hope Daphne gives Steve what he deserves in the finale, because I have no sympathy for Steve.
Yeah.
Amanda almost had me last episode, but now she's willingly participating in this. So I have no sympathy for her either. Brent deserves better. Brent deserved better than Steve and Amanda. Justice for Daphne, justice for Brent. They both deserve better.
And also, justice for us as an audience, because I think it was a little too much to have water boiling on the stove while they were like making out. I was like, okay, we get it. It's hot or whatever.
It's heating up in here.
It's heating. Yeah. I was like, okay.
Am I, but I'm like, if I'm talking to the show, like,
Yes.
Am I supposed to feel for Steve? Am I supposed to feel for Amanda? Because I don't. What am I supposed to feel for them? Am I supposed to be rooting for them as Steve continually cheats on Daphne and Amanda is just okay with it? Am I supposed to like these characters? Like, show, talk to me. Like, how am I? Because Steve is just there, like, you know, honky dory. Like, hey, you're my girlfriend. We're here making these dumplings. Like, no, sir, you have a fiance that you should be doing this with. Like, what is your problem?
Something, okay, you know, there are multiple types of ways you can cheat on a person. And I do think something as intimate as making grandma soup dumplings with someone who is not your fiance goes into the category of an emotional affair of some sort, because it's like something so intimate and close to. And yes, I know that Amanda and Steve have grief group or whatever. But if I were Daphne, like, yes, I'd be pissed about the making out, but I would also be pissed about those soup dumplings. Like, you're telling me? You brought the soup dumplings experience to Amanda and you didn't have that with me. Like, what is happening? Yeah. I don't know how to feel about them. I don't know if we are supposed to feel anything or if it's just supposed to be a, like, look what grief could do.
Like, she was like, why are you here? She's like, I know why you're here. It's the same reason I let you come over here. I was like, cause trauma, cause you both have someone close to you that died. Cause other than your shared person that died, I have no reasoning why you two like each other, why you two are in this. Like, I don't know what Steve likes about you. I don't know what Amanda likes about Steve. All I know is that you both had the same person close to you die in a plane crash.
And I will say, trauma bonds are not love. And I think they might be experiencing a trauma bond.
Yeah. And I think, and again, we have one episode left for this show. I don't think we're going to be able to really delve into that enough for them to figure out that the only reason they're acting out in this way is because they are dealing with trauma right now. And I am at a loss with this, with them.
Yeah. We'll see where it goes. Like with everybody else, I guess.
All right. Let's clean up
our favorite.
Let's just clear our palate here, Marissa, and get on with our favorite, relationship.
Okay.
We've been waiting the whole podcast. We made me wait until the last, section for our favorite.
I guess. We, of course, are talking about Adriana, Kojo, and Vex. It is election day eve, and Adriana is out stumping for her vote, trying to get people to vote in the election for her. But she's a bit distracted, and she keeps looking at her phone. And this is because Kojo and Bex are waiting for her at her place because they are about to get on the plane and go back to Ghana. There's this cute little scene where Bex is like really wants to say goodbye, and Kojo's like, you know, she's really busy. I don't know if she's going to be coming. So Bex colors like an ice cream cone for her and leaves it for Adriana.
Shit, that little girl is a prodigy or something, because she went over it was so good and so fast. She went over to the floor to make the picture. It took her like less than a minute to make this like artist like this expert drawing of an ice cream cone. I was like, oh my god, like this is a drawing genius over here, or just the show has no idea how to really pace out a picture drawn by a kid. I don't know.
And she was like in the lines. Like, it was really, really well
this
done.
This was a pro job. I will say, as the much as lead up as we've gotten for, Bex and Adriana to bond, throughout this episode, Bex was just kind of like, yeah, we're going to leave. It kind of sucks, but maybe I'll see you again some other time. Like, I honestly expected Bex to really go through a lot of hardship in the lead up to her having to say goodbye to Adriana, who she's bonded with so much in the aftermath of her mother's death. And she's just like, yeah, see ya.
We don't have time for that, Jason. We don't have time for that, because
I guess
we have to have the running home scene. Okay. I have been living on TikTok a little too much, I will say. And there is a trend right now where there's a song that plays while people are running. And so like while Adriana is running, it's like, do, 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 do. Like, it's a very like fancy. I had that song in my head while she's doing this run. So she's running home thinking she can catch them. The door, first of all, does she not lock the door? Like, the door was just open. Second of all, she finds the note from Bex. And she has this flashback. I was like, I thought she was looking at Bex at first. I didn't know what she was like looking at, but apparently it was like her when she was younger. And like, she follows her younger self up to a room where her grandma was like hiding out, I think. I don't really know why we got this.
So odd. I was like, what is this supposed to say? What is this?
I think it's like the whole like grandma put me on this path thing.
I also thought, okay, grandma is alone. Grandma is doing all this by herself. She is in this room by herself. Yeah. She's drinking by herself while the party's happening. Was this supposed to signal to Adriana, like, don't end up like me. Don't end up alone drinking at a party. Like, be with your man. But I guess not. I am not, as I've said previously, I'm not a Marissa level, like, dig deep. No, I sometimes need a show to slap me upside the head and tell me what it means.
Yeah.
But I just, like, I was like, what? At the moment, I thought, okay, Grandma Rose is by herself alone. This should signal to Adriana, like, this is not the life you want.
Right. Right. Which is why it was weird. The next scene was weird. And, I think the best shows are shows that tell you what is going on, even if it is vague for a little bit. But the show never is telling me what is actually happening.
Yeah. Like,
it just lets us, like... It's like a choose your own adventure. Like, we get to write the story at the end of the day for some of these characters.
Listen, I don't like shows that do that. Tell me what you mean. Tell me what you want to say. Like, I'm not smart enough to come up with my own conclusions. Those like, tell me what you mean.
Yeah. So she has this flashback. And I think you're right. I think the sentiment here is, you know, like, grandma was alone. And so we find Kojo and Bex at the airport. I say, of course, because I also like get stopped by TSA all the time for like wearing like clothes, I guess. It's like my jeans are like baggy in the wrong place. And so they're like, hey, we need to talk to you. And I'm like, oh, crap. Okay, fine. So
you got me. I had shampoo in my jeans.
Okay. So I felt a lot of sympathy for Coach Annabex, especially because we have not really had a lot of conversations about like their citizenship status or anything like that. So I was really concerned for them. But it turns out it was just Adriana pulling her strings,
just flexing her power. I had the moment too, was like, she has this much power, like she has this much pull, like in places, but no, she just went to school with one of the TSA agents. I would be like, okay, well, why is a TSA agent doing this for her friend? Like, can we talk about like, you know, professional ability here, like in the TSA? Like, come on.
That's another podcast, but yes. So Kojo's like, is this the part of the movie where you stop me at the gates and declare your love for me? And Adriana's like, maybe.
I felt like that was a show being like, yeah, we're not doing that. Yeah. Like, we know y'all thought that's what this is going to be. Yeah. This isn't that, y'all. Like, no, we're not doing that.
And Coach is like, or are you going to join me on the flight? And then he goes into like the sweetest thing I have seen on TV in a long time. It's like, I'll draw you a map. And he just like really describes everything about his home in Ghana and how the family all lives in the same place and they've been building the same home for X amount of years, and everyone's really following the campaign, and he raises pigeons, and they're not like New York City pigeons. They're really, really majestic, and really paints this picture, and Adriana's like, well, now I know where to find you, and I was like, this is so sweet.
Listen, and we crap on this show sometimes, but there are times where this show does things right, and this is one of them. I was like, the scene in Ghana where we're looking through everything as he's describing it, I was like, this is so like great, this is beautiful. It makes me wonder, like, who's writing the Kojo Adriana story, and can they write the whole show? Like, because it just feels like such a different show when Adriana, Bex, and Kojo are on the screen. Like, and I mean, evidenced by the fact that they have no other interaction with anyone else in the grief group, just about. Right. And it's like they just have their own little corner of this show, of this universe, and like that's the show I want to stay in. Like I want that show. I want a spinoff of that show. I want that.
Especially because they like both characters leave enough space for each other to be their whole person and really, you know, explore. Like they love each other. Like Adriana tells Kojo, "I love you." Bex thinks it's her. Bex thinks it's for her. She says, "I love you too." It's so cute. So they allow each other the space to do that. And even like Kojo says, you know, and this is my room. And if tomorrow or a year from now or whenever you decide, there will be space for you. And I was like, oh, it's so good. So good. But
yeah. And Kojo in the moment, he says, like, she says, I love you. And Bex thinks, you know, Bex says, me too. And Kojo says something, says, Mido wo. And I looked it up.
Yeah, what's it mean?
I think it means I love you in Twi, I believe. Ooh. So that he said it in his native language. I was like, oh, that's so beautiful. I thought at first he said me too, but then the closed captioning said the Mido wo thing. I was like, oh, let me look that up. It's like, yeah, that is a Twi for like I love you. I'm like, oh, come on now. Let's go.
I shipped them so hard.
So they hard.
She better
lose that election next episode.
Or
let me tell
she
you.
Better win and give it up. Like one or the other. Don't let us down, episode 10. If you let us down in this storyline, it's gonna be real hard.
Yeah.
So yeah, Adriana looks sad as they go away, but they do get on the plane. Supposedly, we don't see them get on the plane, but they do down the hallway to get on the plane. Like in many a TV shows, no one's dead unless you see a body. So no one gets on a plane unless you see them get on the plane, I think. Mm-hmm. But anyway, anything else from this episode, Jason?
No, I'm excited to see, you know, how this thing ends, how they land the plane, you know, how well or how badly they land the plane. We'll see.
What kind of cupcakes do you think will be served at the party?
Oh my gosh, you're going to be like some gourmet cupcakes that aren't just like, it can't just be like chocolate or vanilla frosting. It has to be just like this extravagant thing that Dee Dee has come up with.
Of course, yeah.
I did like how she called Steve and was like, yeah, Milo asked me to throw a party for the last one. I was like, oh, okay, Dee Dee, sure.
And Steve knows. He's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll bring soup dumplings. Okay, bye.
It's like, I just want everybody to be represented, you know, the different cultures. Just,
yeah, like the different cultures. Yes, okay. But like that also, nobody talked about that in the group. Like,
she probably called Kojo. Was like, can you bring something, some, you know, Ghanaian yes. like dish? She's like, I'm not going to be there. I'm going to be gone. See ya.
Bye. Well, yes, that about to, yeah.
I can't help but feel like this show was supposed to be 12 episodes. Like they wrote it for 12 and, you know, Apple TV was like, nope, we're going to give you 10. And they're like, oh crap. How do we shorten this to 10? I just feel like there is a bunch of stuff just cut out that we're missing. I just can't help but feel that way.
Director's cut.
Yeah.
Or something, or make it into a movie. Either way. Mm-hmm. But congratulations to Anna Politaliano, the author of Dear Edward, because her book was just chosen, her most recent book, which I am blanking on, but it was just chosen as Oprah's 100th Oprah's Book Club book.
Oh.
So.
Look at that.
I don't know. Yeah, look at that. That'll probably be a movie or a TV show at some point.
We'll have to think.
Well, Jason, as always, it was a pleasure podcasting about this episode of Dear Edward with you. But outside of this one, where can people find you and hear more of your fantastic podcasting?
You can find me on Twitter at JAYR1085. At the moment, my other gig is my podcast, A Perfect Match, that I do with Asia Welch. We talk about the show Married at First Sight. It is a crazy reality show about people marrying at first sight, as the title would suggest, and all the shenanigans that come after that. Hear me and Asia break down every episode. You don't even need to watch the TV show to follow the podcast, because we break it all down for you. We have fun over there. Come join us. How about you, Marissa?
For myself, I am wrapping up coverage of You season 4 part 2. I know I've been talking about You for like a very long time. I'm not obsessed.
I keep hearing that you like talking about me, and you know, you get together with all my different co-hosts
really
and talk about
come
me.
Up on like every podcast.
Yeah, I know. It's a curse.
LaTanya Starks and I are wrapping up coverage of season 4 of that show. We've got 2 more podcasts to do on that. So if you have watched and have any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. I'm also podcasting with Sarah Ferguson about Daisy Jones and the Six. There's only 2 more groups of episodes for that, 4 episodes total. So if you're watching that one, we've got a couple more pods in store for you on that one. And then Yellow Jackets season 2 coverage is just kicking off here on Post Show Recaps. There are 2 pods that will be coming your way. I will be on the Deep Dive pod that comes out on the weekends with Jessica Sterling, going into all the theories, talking about all of the 90s, all of the now, all of the fashion. So if you're watching that show, you can hear me podcasting about that here on Potion Recaps. Outside of that, if you are interested in what else I might be up to, you can find me on Twitter at MarsBars, MarzBars, or due to the state of the internet, I am trying to post more on Instagram, although I don't know how I feel about that given the current state of the world, but we'll see how things go. You can find me at It's Me Marissa G on Instagram. All right. Do you have, did we get a letter?
You know, we got a letter. Dear Edward, you know, you can hear other stuff crashing on the internet. You don't actually have to go through with pushing pianos downstairs, smashing light bulbs, as your Uncle John would put it. And if you have any time, hit me with some of that party mix. I'm kind of hungry. Sincerely, Marissa.